Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Why has he gone on to set pieces? What's happened before? What's the data now?
The reason why he wanted us to do it on Monday Night Football was because he's still got to be in his bonnet about Harry Kane taking corners.
Roy texts me at an England game giving us something at half-time on Bellingham, and I said it and they were like, your tactical knowledge is so good. Oh! And I was going to say it.
Yeah.
But I didn't. You
took the credit.
Leverkusen have never won the league before.
Yeah.
I think to be the first guy to win the league there against Munich is pretty special.
I didn't switch City on Tuesday night. I just thought, I felt a bit bored.
He's one of the best players this season, I think. He sets fire alarms off.
We're running late. You know who was late, don't you?
I thought it would be a good idea to go past Stockport and go into central Manchester to get back out here.
Am I still sitting here? Where's Jill? Is Jill... Is there...
Jill must be there.
She's going to... Oh, lads.
Do you all like the idea of... I actually like the idea of Jill keeping a spot and not leaving that free.
Yeah. Putting the golden boot there or something. Have you got one of Wrighty's hats?
I'm feeling old today. You feeling
fresh?
I'm feeling my back.
You know what? I felt so tired. I don't feel too bad today.
Someone's tired you out over the last couple of weeks.
Someone's been on them to do a documentary.
Yeah, honestly. I know when to pull back. I know when to...
Oh, lads. There's too many documentaries out there, isn't there? Do you not think?
Everyone's got one, though, haven't
honestly.
They? Everyone's got a podcast.
Why have the Liverpool players that were in that Spice Boys team not done a Spice Boys documentary? No, seriously, because that would be quite...
Would you?
I think so, yeah, because they were quite a talented group. I don't mean, I'm not taking the piss there.
Like, one in the white suits.
Who is in that group? Who are we putting
Matt
in that group?
Fowler.
I think you're being...
Yeah, I think you're being a bit harsh on them.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
I think it's unfair, that. I really do.
What's unfair, sorry?
Calling the Spice Boys.
Oh, no, that was just a nickname.
I know that, yeah, but it's still not nice.
The names have been called over the years. I've never really said you feel sorry for...
Yeah, but they were true.
Yeah. Funny story, isn't it?
Do you know what I hate when people do a story and you say,
I don't know.
Yeah, but you don't want to do them a disservice either, I think.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Tunnel at Highbury. I've heard 40 different versions of how I was pinned up against a wall, but I was never pinned up against a wall, you know what I mean? And the thing that made you
snap... Who said you were pinned up against
all different people over the years? It's morphed into something sort of like, you know what I mean? I was like fighting for my life, you know what I mean? I was on intravenous drip at one point, I think. And it was where, basically, you walked past him, and if you remember, he squirted his water bottle.
I don't remember that.
Yeah,
part.
He did, because I was next to him, obviously. He waited for me.
That didn't annoy me, because I don't remember that happening.
I thought that was what you snapped at.
No.
Yeah. He had Lucas say,
most of these stories of footballers and over the years.
I know.
You said doubting yourself, don't you?
The best ones is when a fan tells you the story and you were there and you're thinking, that didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And Roy, you're something.
The fans come up to me and tell stuff. I'm like, that's not true.
I was listening to Rio on that same reel last night talking about your end at United, and there were bits in there that I thought that wasn't right or that didn't, you know what I mean? Everyone remembers a different part.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, listen, my memory's not the best, but there's certain things you obviously...
Stick.
Sharp.
Yeah. Like your top, Nev. You've got your...
Do you know something? Do you bought me this? Karen from Salford as a birthday present about 3-4 years ago. I can't remember what it was now for her. Yeah.
Balmain.
Balmain. It's a little...
You know what's just come to me then? You know, you talk about stories and then people sort of contradict you or make me...
Jesus, Jill.
No, because you sneaked the powder. Christ.
You know what he was talking about, the Stone Roses and the music?
Right.
I seen Brian McClure.
Oh, yeah, chalk, yeah, the truth's come out.
Brian McClure come out and said it was a lie.
Yeah.
And then we sorted the music out.
Did he?
Have you not seen that?
Who thinks lying?
Chalky's a great memory, I give him that.
Yeah.
What did he say? He said something like...
Yeah.
Is he on Twitter?
I mean, Chalky, I love Chalky so,
isn't it? 2 minutes and you
I was supposed to go to the Super Bowl, wasn't it? I couldn't... You couldn't have stayed, could you?
Well, I should have mentioned it. I'm not a fan of Vegas. You were a fan of Vegas?
I wouldn't have really put you with Vegas.
Yeah. Honestly, I just thought it was a terrible place.
A bit tacky?
Yeah.
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 So we love it.
Is that like
it? No, it wasn't for me have you at been? All.
I've been
Why
before,
is that not working?
Yeah. But it's just like, I didn't go in the summer. It wasn't really like summer. I feel like summertime would be good. Like,
it'd be too hard.
Do you think?
Yeah, do you drink a lot, Jill?
No. No. I do like a glass of red wine now that I've finished playing. I was a bit of a geek when I played. I didn't really drink too much. I wasn't good enough.
You're the Gary Neville.
Well, I just wasn't good enough. Like, I couldn't get away with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was me.
Yeah. All I could do really was run. So if I'd had a drink, whereas your technical players could just chill and, do you know what I mean?
Why didn't you like Vegas?
No,
I just didn't like it. It wasn't my feeling.
Yeah, was the time difference? Was your body clock all over?
Just the jet lag's terrible.
I know, that never helps.
You're blocking me, you see. Is that what it is? You're blocking me.
God.
Jill, I wanted to still keep you there.
Really?
And sort of put a little memento. We wanted a little memento on Righty's chairs.
Oh,
like.
You could have. I prefer being here, though. It's like I'm more involved.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, you can swap your chairs if you want. I can sit there.
If you perform well today, you've got the
shirt on. Yeah, that's it.
You're
on trial today, Jill. Yeah.
You keep your place.
Right.
God, these are big bananas. The size of that.
Yeah. Fuck them up.
Seem bigger.
Should we start? Welcome to Stick to Football, brought to you by Sky Bet. And this week, joining me are Jill, Roy and Cara. And we're going to be talking about Dan Ashworth potentially joining Manchester United from Newcastle. And as the Champions League become boring? And also, is Roy going to get closer to me on the Super Six predictions? Last night, I was watching the Champions League. You've been down in London covering the Champions League over the last couple of days. I feel really bad saying this because it feels like it's a... But has it been boring this week, the Champions League? Has it been just because the games or the draw?
Yeah. I think we're at a stage now where I used to always feel like the Champions League kicked in at the knockout stage. It almost feels like it kicks in at the quarterfinal stage now. You very rarely get like a really big, juicy game, I feel, sort of in the last 16 round. The teams who win the group normally win them comfortably. And more often than not, the team who finish second in another group who they get. There's always like, you almost feel like you can predict who the quarters are going to be. It feels like there's a big shift between the sort of teams. But they were a bit dull. And I go back to it. I think we spoke about this last week. I think the away goal not being in, honestly, I think it takes a bit of the excitement away from it. Mm. I do. I think there was the away goal just made it just, it could just blow up by one goal. And now it just feels a bit, I don't know. I think it's still, for me, the best competition out there, the Champions League, but it almost feels like you've got to get to the quarterfinals. You get those heavyweight clashes. But next season, it's completely changing, isn't it? I think that's probably one of the reasons why, because it's felt a little bit dull, maybe the last few years. And then you go into that Swiss model, isn't it? You're aware of what that
there's
is.
There's going to be more teams, isn't there? Is there going to
be
more teams?
Yeah, so I think there's... So is the 32 teams in the group, I've got that right. So I think there's an extra four teams, so it's 36, and it's like a league. So imagine you break that down to, who's got at maths here? So what would that be? Eight
teams of 12.
Or 10, or whatever it must be. So there's like, say, four groups, if you like, tiers. So they're the top tiers, and you've got the bottom ones. So whatever groups, so say Manchester City are at the top, they'll play someone who else is in their, like a seed. So they might play like a Real Madrid
in the
group. Then they'll play two from the next group, then two, and they'll play two teams at the bottom. But what it also does is the teams at the bottom normally, they might get 1 point in the group.
Yeah.
So they're actually playing a game against someone at their level.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
right, yeah.
So I think it's quite exciting for the Champions League, but what happens then, it becomes like a league. You don't play home and away as well, which is a bit weird. So the team, so I think City, if City got Real Madrid, they might be away at Madrid, but their home is somewhere else or whatever. But then all the points go as a league. And then the top eight, I think, go straight through to the next round.
Yeah.
And then the middle, what would be left there? Come on, help me.
Middle.
So the bottom teams are out, if the bottom, say, eight or ten or what. And then the ones in the middle, they've got to do like a playoff.
Oh, right, OK.
To then go through. And I actually think, so you'll probably get better games in
the some poor teams in the Champions League, you know, isn't it? Even the group games.
Well, I used to always, I think when the Champions League first started, the way I look at it was, yous were involved in it. You know, yous would probably be resting players in the Premier League a little bit, thinking, oh, we've got Champions League midweek. Mm. I think it's the other way now. I actually think you see the best teams go, oh, we'll be fine. Mm. You know, we've got a big game at the weekend. Yeah. You know, in the Premier League as well. So that's, and that's where I think you probably looked at it, and you're getting probably going to get bigger head-to-heads in the.
So there's quite a lot of emphasis on the draw then, because if you don't play them home and away, that is a big advantage, isn't it? Like, say.
But I think there'll be a way. Yeah. But I think there'll be some. They won't just make it that you're in the top team.
So could it be five teams from the Premier League this year that are in?
Yeah, I think it will.
So United's got a chance.
They've got a chance, yeah. No, they are.
So the better City do in the Champions League, the more chance United have got to get in the first position.
Oh, okay.
Did you watch the games, Rod? Did you feel it was a little bit...
I didn't watch too much of them, I'll be honest with you. And no, I love watching the games, but a couple of teams' games just didn't grab my attention. Maybe the second leg, but when it's the first leg as well, you think, do you know what? I'll probably wait till the second leg. No, I didn't get sucked into the games, no.
But also, I keep going back to the away goal. If you're an away team now, there's no big thing about we've got to nick an away goal. Like, that was a big thing, wasn't it? You playing your own thing, we've got to get the away goal, we've got to get it. Now it's like if you get beat 1-0, it's not, the game's 0-0. So if you went away and drew 0-0, you'd actually think it was a bad result.
You'd be thinking, if they
get the away goal.
Now it's
just like.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it was a massive mistake that.
Bayern will turn around that result, though, do you think?
There's big problems there at the moment.
Why is the big problems?
Well, the results that they're having. It hasn't gone particularly well. I don't think for Thomas Tuchel since he's gone in. He was brilliant at Chelsea, won the Champions League. But last season, they won the league basically the last kick of the game. And it's an exciting way for the league, and it must have been great for the Bundesliga as such. But Munich are just so used to dominating the league. This season, they're 5 points behind. At the start of the season, they lost their charity shield, if you like, or their Super Cup to Leipzig. They went out of the German Cup to a lower division team. They're now going to be tough for them in the Bundesliga. Who knows with the Champions League? So you're looking at actually not just Tuchel, but you look at Harry Kane. You almost feel like you leave Tottenham to be almost guaranteed. You've got the League One, probably the German Cup, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's just about can you win the Champions League? And then he's left it. And at this moment, it's looking like he's not going to get his hands on anything. Which is unbelievable when you go to Munich. It's almost like a...
They got well beaten the weekend as well in the league, didn't they?
Oh, got battered.
Would have hammered. 3-0.
So that's 5 points now. Yeah.
Off your new manager. You're championing that a little bit, aren't you?
Well, it's just the obvious one, isn't it? I mean, I don't see who else it... It could... The only reason I don't think it could be Alonso is if he doesn't want to come or if he thinks I need another year at Leverkusen or...
But if they didn't win the league in Germany, would you have a doubt? Would you have a little... If they won the league, you're thinking that's another big plus on the CV. But you say... They slipped up because Bayern are more than capable of coming back, a bit like last year, and he slipped up when he didn't win the league. Would that change your mindset towards him? No?
Listen, of course, if you win the league, and I think I said this on Monday Night Football, I think the great managers, even if you start with sort of Ferguson, it's not great because of what he did at Man United. It's almost like what he did at Aberdeen. You go, wow. Mourinho at Porto, Klopp at Dortmund, all these sort of Pep stars at Barca. But a lot of the great... We had Rafa, he comes to Liverpool, wins the Champions League, but he wins the league at Valencia. You know, so they always have to do something a little bit, out there that most people can't do. And I think winning the league, Leverkusen have never won the league before.
Yeah.
I think to be the first guy to win the league there against Munich is pretty special. And as I said, I don't even think it's just the Liverpool link. I think if there was a coach at Bayer Leverkusen doing that and the United job was up for grabs or Liverpool or Arsenal, that guy, whoever he was, I think would be in the reckoning if he'd done that.
Yeah. Do you think that's the biggest thing to judge a manager on? Not necessarily when they get that top job, but how they get there, like winning the league with Sunderland, like something like that.
Yeah, that would, again, especially if you're up against teams like Bayern Munich. Yeah, of course. Huge plus. Mm. Getting over the line.
I think there's probably two different jobs, isn't it? You see people do well under the radar, then they get the big job. And then people go, oh, you know, he's got big players, he's got to play a certain style. And that's why I always feel like the criticism of, the only one criticism of Pep is that, oh, he hasn't done it with, like, a lesser team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But how many managers have had the resources and been at a massive club and completely failed because, you know, getting that respect of a dressing room, those big players, you know, so I never have that criticism.
But when he picked up Barcelona, obviously they hadn't won the Champions League the year before that. And I don't think they won the league the year before. I might be wrong, but there's something like they weren't doing them incredibly well. So what he did there was completely transform them. On Tuesday night, it's actually a post, and to be fair, I wouldn't sort of ordinarily look at a post on social media and think it resonates, but I felt it a little bit. I didn't switch City on Tuesday night. I'll come to you, Jill, first on it. Mm-hmm. I just thought a bit like, I felt a bit bored. Mm. And I saw a post, and you may have seen it, from a Liverpool fan that said he watched every single one of Sir Alex Ferguson's Manchester United games in the Champions League, because there was that feeling that, one, there was either going to be excitement one way or the other, they'd lose or they'd win and the game would be exciting.
Yeah.
But you just can't watch City. And that he felt it was just like, it's almost like they've ruined it a little bit. It's a bit boring. Now, to be fair, it's a bit, I wanted to open the, you know, a bit of a hornet's nest, I know.
See the headline now, can't you?
No, because I think to call City boring is, to be fair, would be wrong, because the football they play is outstanding. And I actually think I actually thought they were boring. I found it difficult to watch them. But since Haaland's gone, they're a bit more imperfect. I actually like them a lot more with the four big defenders and Haaland up front. But is there a bit of of that now with them? Is there a bit of a boredom thing with City?
Yeah, because they're so brilliant, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
I get where you're coming from, but I certainly wouldn't agree when fans say that about City, and they're very technical, and the stats the other night are unbelievable in terms of away from home. I know Copenhagen wouldn't be that great, don't get me wrong, even though they beat United, didn't they? But yeah, but I kind of admire that stuff. I admire when a team can dominate so much, whether it be possession, the players, their style. I like their style of play.
Yeah.
But I get it.
Do you like the style?
Yeah, I can. I like it because of the brilliance with it.
Yeah.
Listen, we watch a lot of teams who try and kind of do all that stuff and possession, and they get nowhere far. But they're topping it off as well with winning and scoring goals. And I'd give City the thumbs up, honestly, which is hard, obviously, being at United. But I get the argument where people say, even Liverpool the last years, Liverpool a bit more emotional, a bit get a forward quicker. But because they're so technical and brilliant, I admire that.
It's just such like an efficient model, isn't it? It's like getting in a car and it works every single time. It's like, why does something have to go wrong to then make it exciting and everything else? And I'm exactly the same. Like, you can see the patterns, exactly what they're trying to do. And it only ever breaks down because of like a technical action gone wrong or something. So to call City boring, I definitely wouldn't agree with that. Even as the games go on and it's like, it's 1-1 or it's 0-0. You've seen Haaland obviously score.
There's no jeopardy.
I'll change it from boring to have they become a little bit unwatchable, in the sense of, like you say, the jeopardy's not there. People just think it's going to be inevitable.
It's just they're good. And I actually think, you know, you think about them, and Roy's just mentioned with the ball and stuff. I just think they're that good defensively as well. It's like you never feel like... So, say they're at home to someone in the bottom half of the table, and I'm thinking, I hope they lose or they drop points. But you start thinking about the game, you're playing, you're thinking, how are the other team going to get a corner?
Yeah.
How are the team going to get... how are they going to get in the half?
Yeah.
You know,
and they played Everton last week, didn't they? And I looked at Everton played, and not just Everton, lots of... And they look like they're a lower league team who've gone there in a cup match, and they're just hanging in there for the whole game. Yet you're going, you're in the same league as them.
Yeah.
It's almost...
Well, Everton had the lowest touches anyone have ever had, I think, or this season in the penalty. Like, not right? Like shots, touches in the penalty box.
Yeah.
Now, that's not having to go with Everton. That's just how good they are. And that's when I go back to Sutton United. And I was watching your teams hoping you'd get beat. But they're always that thing of, like, you go one or two down and they're coming back and the game's a bit... And you're on edge yourself, hoping they lose, they could win.
Yeah.
With City, they're just that good in every aspect of the game. And to be honest, I don't think it's, like, a City thing and a money thing and they've got all the best players. I think it's Pep.
Yeah.
I just think Pep
is
that good.
The detail as well. Like, everyone talks about in possession, and I'm not saying any other teams aren't set up like this, because, of course, they are, but there's so much detail when they're in possession of how they're going to be if they're suddenly out of possession. And I think that's why they're so good defensively. Mm. You've got so many players thinking, I'm not going to go because I know I've got to stop the counter, and it just all works so efficient. And I think, like, when I was there, I was obsessed with the detail. I was obsessed. I wanted to sit in more meetings, and because it just opens you up to this whole kind of like new way of football. But yeah, I've got, I think Phil Foden at the minute as well. Like, and to see him have came through from like the younger age groups, he's just, he's one of the best players this season, I think. I know we were talking about player of the season, weren't we, on a couple of shows previously. He sets fire alarms off.
We were on about meetings, and but when we were at United, we've already, people don't believe us. We never had meetings, did we?
Not?
We never really discussed tactics. Did you not? Did we?
I didn't think we were. To be fair, I think because we were so familiar with each other, maybe those patterns of play that existed. But I don't think we might. He might say certain games, you know, play a bit deeper against them or something, or
maybe.
You know, but I don't think there was any. There was never sort of any like sort of. No, there weren't many like sort of nuances with of what we were doing.
Yeah, I didn't feel.
I think it was a lot of it was off the cuff stuff. Yeah, and obviously good players. And
do you think the game's developed though to that? Or
just
not?
With basic principles like one fullback goal, one stay, one midfield player goal, one make sure you're sitting. You know, it was that type. Forwards on the last line, one forwards dropping in the hole. It was them principles, wasn't it? Really.
Yeah.
There wasn't really a sort of a...
What we have to admire City for as well. So they're playing Everton, who were going to sit in, and then they end up getting the first goal, whatever, from a set piece.
Yeah.
We saw them at the FA Cup recently. And they're also really good at set pieces. Mm. So sometimes you might go, a team are really good at possession, but I tell you what, we can get on them. They're really strong on that side of as well. And that desire to defend. And I love the fact when they win every week, it looks like it's Pep's first league win.
Yeah.
Because the first thing that happens when you get successful in life, people... They drop their guard, or they lose the eye of the tiger. But I don't see it with Pep, considering what he's won.
It's interesting you say about set pieces, because I was doing the Crystal Palace Chelsea game on Monday night, and it came up like the four or five worst teams in the league for set pieces, for scoring, and they were all the teams at the bottom. The perception was, when I felt like we were playing, that the teams at the bottom, say Wimbledon's, Crystal Palace's, Stokes, they would be the teams that were the best at set pieces, and we were the worst, and we'd have to obviously stop.
Well, obviously, they're getting more opportunities to.
Yeah, maybe, but that's how it felt. Not with you. Like the best teams weren't good at set pieces, but now the best teams are the best at set pieces.
Because when you're not one of the best teams, it's like we've got to rely on our set pieces. Yeah. Get a goal off a set piece.
They were spending an hour on the training ground day before.
But I think City are that good. I'd be interested in how many teams are even getting corners against them. Yeah. They're not even getting that many corners. Yeah. You know, you can get wide free kicks, but they're not even getting that opportunity to say. We're going to be really good at set pieces. Well, you can be really good at them, but if you're not getting any high up the pitch, then there's going to be no danger to City.
It is difficult to see who's going to stop. I feel like they've got... I think they're likely going to win the league, but I feel like they've got more chance of being stopped in the league than they have in the Champions League for some reason this week. Mm. Having watched... You know, I may well see a few teams.
I don't think there's anyone close to them in the Champions League. I actually think the team who could maybe have a chance against Arsenal. Because when you look at it, because Arsenal haven't won anything big yet, this team are still thinking... How good are they? Can they get across the line in a big one? But then you go and watch the Champions League, and I'm watching like Bayern Munich, a huge, massive team. Arsenal better team. Yeah. Arsenal beat Bayern Munich.
I agree.
I think Arsenal beat Paris Saint-Germain. Mm. So I'm actually looking at the Champions League thinking, who could actually stop City? And I'm thinking, probably Arsenal. But even if they met each other, we know City would be massive favourites.
Yeah.
But I actually think Arsenal. I'm trying to think, is there one more team in there who I've maybe forgot? Inter Milan, this top of Serie A, got the final last season, but no, there's not too.
You just always think sometimes, I think, that you can't deny history sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. Like Real Madrid or something like that comes up.
So
if like an Arsenal played a Real Madrid, who, to be fair, are a top side, still got a decent team now. Psychologically, of the Champions League, that could stop Arsenal because they haven't been there. We spoke about sort of Liverpool in the past doing well in the Champions League because they just feel like they belong there. But Arsenal, I think Arsenal got a decent chance.
That was a big win, wasn't it? The West Ham one. Mm. That was a they got a couple of set pieces, didn't they?
Yeah. Declan Rice taking set pieces.
Yeah.
Did you cover that on Monday Night Football in the end?
No. No, he didn't. We'd done Arsenal the week before, and he was because he took himself a little bit away from it, haven't you? But you still want your input.
So
he starts texting you saying you need to do this.
Does he text you?
I very rarely text, right? But I was doing the United Villa game on Sunday, and first I was watching the Arsenal West Ham game, and. One of the stats guy, I was obviously Declan Rice is taking set pieces.
Yeah.
I said to the stats guy, who's an Arsenal fan, I said, when did he start taking set pieces? And he said 4 games ago, he scored a corner against Crystal Palace 4 games ago where he started taking, which was Trossard and Martinelli before then. And then he scored, obviously, they scored two on Sunday from his set pieces. And I was interested in the sort of idea behind. He's obviously just gone to set pieces. Seeing a 6'2", 6'3" player on set pieces.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's, you wouldn't ordinarily think it would happen. So I was thinking, why has he gone on to set pieces? What's happened before? What's the data
but,
now?
But the reason why he wanted us to do it on Monday Night Football was because he's still got a bee in his bonnet about Harry Kane taking corners.
So.
So this was the set piece guru for Roy Hodgson's England, and Harry Kane, England's
Cara.
Great goal scorer, was on corners, and he always used to come back in and say he's the best kicker of a ball. So that's what you're getting to, aren't you?
So just why you against Rice, Tick? What's the big deal? No, I'm not against Rice. I'm just saying it. Yeah. I'd not seen him take them.
He's not expected because he's big.
He's 6 foot. He so you don't normally see. So, you know, Wayne Rooney used to take them for United, even though he was a good head of the ball and goal scorer, because he was a good kicker of the ball. But to see Declan Rice take free kicks and corners in the last few weeks, it's new. It's brand new for Arsenal. It's only happened in the last few weeks.
With the new...
So I just thought it might be covered.
Yeah, but you mentioned one or two other players who've been taking. Sometimes if they're not playing, he's definitely got a good technique, hasn't he?
Yeah, very good. And with them old Predator boots coming back, it was very David Beckham-like. It was. I thought he had a very.
So was it your was it your decision or Roy's with Harry Kane and why?
We had this big problem because.
Oh, was it you who put him on them?
Yes.
I remember.
So he put England's on nine.
I was absolutely.
The problem wasn't attacking set pieces; was defending them.
So what happened was basically we had a team, and I'm trying to think of the exact team that we had. We had Daniel Sturridge. It was either Rooney or Kane that took them. Right, and we basically looked at the stats, and Rooney had scored more from corners on headers than Kane. Like, basically, they were the only two that could essentially deliver a set piece. All the other players, you've got Raheem Sterling, Danny Welbeck, Daniel Sturridge, midfield were, I think, Henderson and...
Was Wilshere in that squad?
Wilshere, Dele Alli, none of them are set piece takers. Yeah. The back four was Kyle Walker, never taken set pieces in life. Two centre halves, never taken set pieces in their life.
You're not thinking about this when you're picking the squad.
No, we had a couple of set piece takers because I think James Milner was probably on the bench type thing, and he was a good set piece taker. But what I'm saying,
you want to take a corner.
So if you remember Gareth in the next tournament in 2018, I always say this, and to be fair, there's a big difference between 16 and 18 with set pieces. If you look at Gareth, he scored from, I think, two or three set pieces. Trippier was in the squad. I think a couple of others came in the squad. And the big difference, they scored, I think, quite a few goals from set pieces or from free kicks. And we just didn't have anybody who took corners or free kicks. It was either Rooney or Kane.
Yeah.
And in the end, Kane was on them, but in the end, he came off them after about 1.5 games and Wazza went on them. And we didn't score from anyone.
Did you see him as that?
I think in the end, it just became so... what's the word? I think it became hostile. Because when Harry used to go over to the corner to take a free kick, the England fans were like, oh, what are you doing? Get in the middle, type thing, which was, you know, I was praying.
So did you bow the pressure?
Give in to the crowd.
And to be fair, I remember Wazza come in and just said, look, to be fair, there's no point in it. It's me or him. I'll go and take him in the end. And he ended up swapping with him. But it became a big thing. But it wouldn't have become a big thing, obviously, if you win games. It becomes a big thing when you don't win games.
Yeah.
I mean, Declan Rice.
Yeah, but delivery is so important.
Oh, it's massive. Yeah, it's everything. Delivery. You don't get the delivery.
People talk about movement. Yeah. You can move all you want. If the delivery's not good.
Yeah.
Right, it's the only thing I remember Sir Alex Ferguson saying about attacking set pieces. And he say, basically, the delivery will be good because it was, let's say, Beck's as an example. He said, make sure you basically get across your man. And you sprint. That was it. Good delivery and get across your man. Mm. And we used to score quite a lot of goals from set pieces. I mean, you scored, obviously, one in Turin famously and other goals as well. But we scored lots from set pieces. You think of Steve Bruce. The reason United won a league against Sheffield Wednesday back in 93, two set pieces.
Yeah.
So you think the delivery is good, and then the sort of the runs.
99 was a set, was the winning goal, a set piece.
Set piece.
Yeah. So the set pieces win Champions League finals, they win leagues, they win everything.
It's mad though now, because if you get the ball in that part of the pitch, they usually like play, don't they? Like they would never think about just whacking the ball. You know how like used it at United, like putting crosses in? It doesn't really happen so much now, does it, in open play? It's like wingers on the inside, like little intricate play, but it is so important. When we won the league with City about 7 years ago, and I think the majority of our goals were off set pieces. Yeah. I think our centre-half was top goal scorer, but it is such a difference. Going back to when you text, giving him some on Monday Night Football, I remember you text me.
Jill, you know what I mean?
No, yeah. Roy text me at an England game, giving us something at half-time on Bellingham, and I said it, and they were like, your tactical knowledge is so good. I was going to say it at Joe Cole. I was going to say it, oh, Roy texted, but I didn't. I just,
You took the credit.
I said I took it.
Monday night football.
Was run us. I'm sure you would have got there already.
No, yeah. It was good. It was really good. It was good.
Monday night football is a show about little sort of nuggets of detail and little bits of analysis. And I just thought, look, he's three goals from
the team. Yeah, team.
Yeah. So anyway,
would you put Trent on England set pieces? You'd put him over Rice, wouldn't you?
What do you want to take them for England, might he?
Who have England got that can take set pieces? Obviously, if Trent played, they've got Trent.
Does Saka take
Shaw them? Takes them sometimes, don't they, with his left foot? Trippier, if he plays, obviously takes
Harry Kane.
We didn't have anybody who could actually...
Let it go. Let it go.
Anyway, right.
What about defending set pieces? Was it the Iceland game? Was that that long throw? Was it Wayne doing it?
Were you coach for that as well?
No, I wasn't on defensive
set pieces.
He wasn't
on set pieces then. Yeah.
No, I wasn't on defensive set pieces, to be fair. We did a lot of work on the Iceland throwing, should I say. A lot of work.
That's so frustrating as a coach, though, isn't it?
Yeah. No, but it goes to show you can do stuff all week. It's come to crunch. It's when lads who want to head it and who do their jobs properly.
Believe it or not, maybe an impact, and I don't know. I mean, sometimes it sounds a little bit like a sort of thing a commentator would say, but you switch off when you've just scored a goal. We just scored a goal, haven't we?
Yeah.
And then literally got a throw-in.
But that stat's not true. That's not true, that.
It sounds like a commentator's line, what I mean? Exactly. Yeah.
But that stat itself.
Yeah.
The worst score, it's not true. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we have that stat, please? What is the actual statistic on goals?
That is so true.
Well, you never believe anything I tell you.
But what is the stat? What's the statistic?
When people say, you're at your most vulnerable, you've just scored, that's not true. That's not true.
Yeah. Well,
geez, you'd have to check with anybody. Jesus.
I was looking for some numbers around it and some sort of like statistics and stuff. But anyway, let's move on.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It looks like Dan Ashworth has been approached or has told Newcastle that he's wants to leave and join Manchester United. Just talking about it before we go on to Manchester United, from Newcastle's perspective, is that a kick in the teeth for them in terms of sort of the scale of what they're trying to achieve up there? And obviously, he's the pillar, really, behind the sort of football.
I've honestly, when Newcastle came in and people were talking about, obviously, the investment was huge and stuff like that, I was never, from a Liverpool point of view, thinking, oh, this is sort of like the new team in town, this is going to be another City or a Chelsea, because I think it's more difficult now, isn't it, with the FFP stuff. And I do think Newcastle had such a great season last season, but they have almost hit a ceiling a little bit where you're like, oh, how do you make that next jump? And people will look at some of the players that they've got, and Dan Ashworth, maybe even Eddie Howe, sometimes, if Gareth Southgate leaves in the summer, you'd imagine the FA would go for Eddie Howe, wouldn't you? I would imagine. I think that's a big blow for them. Yeah. And I always feel like no matter, Newcastle, huge football club, but they're never going to be Man United.
Yeah.
So if Man United come for one of the players, come for a manager, come for a sporting director, he's going to go, and I think it's a great appointment.
Mm. He's done well at Newcastle, hasn't he? He's brought in some good players. And I think his main thing is that high-performing culture. So Man United would benefit from that massively. But he has done a good job wherever he's been, hasn't he, really, Newcastle?
He's had a great reputation, hasn't he? Yeah. But I don't think a club either should be so dependent. You said, what will happen to Newcastle? You like to think Newcastle can survive. It's a blow. It's like blow, Brighton. Listen, he left Brighton. That's the nature of the beast. But from a United's point of view, we've been speaking the last 6 months. What changes can they make? And you said get the best people, and he looks like he knows what he's doing. So it's no surprise United have gone in for him.
I read a newspaper article on him today, and something I'd never really heard in football before. You'll know a bit more, Roy. When you've got your scouts. So he's obviously in charge of the recruitment. He's got a scout. This was at Brighton, and they were all over the world. So normally you'd say, oh, we've got a guy in Portugal, we've got a guy in Spain. He changed that from not just having a guy in a country. A scout was responsible for position around the world. So do you understand what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like you just look at all the centre-backs, you just look at all the wingers, you look at all the strikers. And I thought, I've never heard that before. Yeah. And they thought that was a big part of what happened at Brighton.
Is this in Newcastle or Brighton?
I think it was more Brighton, but I just thought it was interesting because you hear that, don't you? We've got a scout in Spain, and he covers all the players in Spain. But it was about basically someone had a job for centre backs, goalkeepers, and just doing it differently. I thought it was quite interesting.
Well, that scout network, that's scout's role years ago. When you're talking about back in our day, you'd have a scout probably. One in the northwest, one in Scotland, or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, the range of scouting. We've seen it, obviously, the way the game's opened up, the money available now. So there's no surprise what you're telling me there, Jamie. Yeah, the way Brighton have done it, they must look at that and they look at Newcastle's recruitment. And we go back. Recruitment is key. Recruitment is key. And what Man United have got, whatever they've done badly over the last few years, I think recruitment's probably number one, where they've got it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People talk about Liverpool's recruitment and you think of sort of Michael Edwards is always, famed for what he did alongside obviously Jurgen Klopp and people at the club. So I went to see him once because I thought I wanted to get a little bit more information. It wasn't for me to do, come out and speak, but obviously this is years later. And I'm expecting some real big insight about how many scouts they've got, how they watch them, how they see different things. And he said the biggest thing for us about getting the players that we want, he said, is relationships with agents. And I just thought, I was expecting more than that.
Yeah.
But he was a bit like, it's massive, basically. You see that agent fees, don't you?
Yeah.
At the end of every season. I'm not saying it's just about the money, but he was saying about like having a good relationship with their agents.
I can see that, though. I mean, the trust that, I think an agent will, agents have got a bad reputation, but they won't do someone over that they work well with and trust because they won't get the next gig. And I think it makes sense, doesn't it? And if you did Liverpool over on a signing, you would never get a gig again. It spread quite quickly.
Yeah.
United have been, because they haven't had a sporting director in the last 10 years, they've been played. They've been so naive at that level, I imagine, in terms of dealing with agents, that the agents have just, it was almost like the bingo call, wasn't it? In terms of, so if United rang you, or if you rang, you were almost thinking you were going to get another 20, 30, 40 million straight away because they're just so naive and didn't have that relationship. But Dan Ashworth, I think, obviously did a good job at West Brom, but I was there with England when he was appointed and been there probably a year or two before he came in. There was a big change when he came in and it was quite a jolt at the time because obviously when you sort of haven't got a technical director like Dan Ashworth, but then you have, and he obviously had a good relationship with Roy, he brought Dave Redding in, who was a performance director as well. Do you remember Dave Redding?
Yeah.
And it was quite a jolt for Roy at the time because they were talking about things like sort of kicking coaches, sort of like attacking coaches. They were talking about attacking set piece coaches, almost breaking the game down into its sort of what would be real intimate detail. Where Roy had worked for 30, 40 years in very much a sort of way with coaches on the field, with the players, working sort of the assistant coaches. And I remember Dan having a conversation with him at the time. And it felt to me like obviously Roy was in the role, but they were building all these foundations below. And they started with the 21s, the 18s, the women's team.
Yeah.
And you think of the success with the 20s, the 21s, the women's team that's happened in the last sort of what would be 7 or 8, 10 years. Mm-hmm. It all started really from when Dan came. Now, I'm not saying that he was responsible for what happened in the women's game. I'm not saying he was responsible for what happened in the 21s. But he had a big influence within the FA of professionalising it. The FA was a terrible organisation from a professionalism point of view. And I felt what he did, he put processes in place, and like they're very structured and organised.
Yeah.
And he did a really good job, I felt. And when obviously then Gareth came in, he almost had like someone that was in his mould.
Yeah.
That was actually, to be fair, there's a thread there between Dave Redding. So when all the detail came in 2018 with the set pieces where they all did the sort of, you could tell they'd been working on it for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
You've been an international coach, so you'll understand this. You meet up in September, you do your 10 days, then you tend to be fair, not see the players then for another month.
Right.
You tend to not go on the training pitch for another month.
Dave Redding wanted things like, he wanted them to bring in dummy players to do mock sessions in between.
For the coaching staff.
For the coaching staff, so that they worked on stuff, so that when they actually got them in.
And is that including the manager, Roy Hodgson?
Yeah, yeah. What he wanted stuff like that to come in. He wanted stuff like extra sessions, you know, because the players come tired, don't they? They don't want to do two, three sessions a day. But there were, at the time, there were countries that were doing two or three sessions a day. They wanted extra videos. They wanted so much more cramming into the sort of what
was. Was Roy okay with all that?
No, Roy wasn't okay with it. And I wasn't okay with it at the time. But there was an element of them wanting to really extract every last sort of drop of juice out of the orange in that period. And because it felt like they were trying to take it to more like a performance, like cycling is, or like swimming is, or like athletics is.
And I thought us as the women's team was getting extra sessions.
But seriously, he wanted all these things to be introduced. And I think they had to wait maybe a year or two for it to happen.
Yeah.
But eventually, I think they got what they wanted with Steve Cooper, with Roy Hodgson, you know, with Gareth Southgate.
There was talented players as well coming through.
Yeah, of course there was a bit of talent. But in the World Cup in 18, I know they got a good draws, but actually the set pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And getting to the semi-final. No one expected them to get to the semi-final in that tournament. So there was an element there of, I think, you're right, there were some talented players coming through, but there was...
Which gives you a huge help, of course. Mm. You can put all that structure in place, fantastic, but if you've got the talented players coming through, amazing. But if there's players not coming through, all that stuff is...
So are you expecting... A huge shift in the performance of Manchester United and the appointment of the guy from Manchester City.
Yeah, but I couldn't believe Dan when he left the FA, went to Brighton. I was like, that doesn't seem like a step up. Then we see what he did with Brighton. And then obviously Newcastle is a step up and what he's done there in terms of managing expectations. I'm not saying that he's going to go into Manchester United and be successful, but if you've got the guy in from City, which obviously they have now, you brought Dan Ashworth in, at least you've got people in roles that belong. In the last 10 years, there haven't been people in roles that belong. Mm. So there's a start of something. Look, there's disruption. There's interference with the mediocrity that we've seen in the last 10 years already. If he comes in, I do think there's a chance that, you know, you've got that sort of performance mentality, that excellence mentality that they do have, that could run through the club quite quickly. Look, it's a big job still.
Do you think a lot of this is... Obviously, we talk about Jim Ratcliffe coming in, but do you think a lot of this is Brailsford?
Oh, I've no doubt. No, Jim Ratcliffe is obviously trusting in Dave Brailsford to say, look, you know, basically, we need the best CEO, the best sporting director, the best head of recruitment and the best coach. You know, the two that have got yet to be sorted, the head of recruitment and coach, but they're doing it one by one, obviously, aren't they? You know, if Dan comes, he'll want, I suspect, authority at the club to be able to make decisions.
How long was he at Brighton for?
I think it's like 2 or 3 years, 4 years. Right.
Sometimes you've got big plans.
3 years, I think he was there. Right.
How long was he at Newcastle for?
I think 2 years.
2 weeks. He's
not been there long.
Obviously, we're on about a guy coming in and getting the best for the job. He doesn't hang around, does he? Obviously, I'm not sure loyalty is the top of his priority.
No, but my point is, Roy, you wouldn't argue him going from Newcastle to Man United,
right,
would you?
Of course, yeah, but when he left Brighton to Newcastle, Newcastle at the time, big plans were doing this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Newcastle maybe are, you know, obviously that was going to slow down eventually, the bit of success they've had over the last, 12, 18 months. And he's now jumping into Man United, you know. You have to look at all that side of a personality as well. No doubt he's brilliant at his job, but who's to say in a year and a half then he might want to go to Real Madrid or Barcelona?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if he's going to Real Madrid or Barcelona in a year or two, he's done very well at Manchester United in a year or two, they've switched. I mean, the big thing coming up for United, and to be fair, it's almost like the Alex Ferguson factor leaving United 10 years ago. An element of Jurgen Klopp leaving and maybe Pep. I can't believe Pep's going to hang around for more than 12 months or so now. I can't believe that he is going to be there for another 2, 3, 4 years. That they've got to be there.
People said Pep's going to leave about a year or two ago.
I know, but I can't believe he's going to be there for more than 18 months. I just can't. If he is, obviously, great for City. But if he's not, he has got to make sure Manchester United are in that spot that if Klopp does leave and they have a bit of turbulence at Liverpool, if Pep does leave, that he's ready to jump. He's got to be. I think that would be, for me, the opportunity for United. I mean, they're away away from it at the moment. They're way away from it. You watch them on Sunday at Villa. They're still playing poorly and winning games. I mean, they play poorly on Sunday.
And that's to get it. You know, we're talking about Man United trying to get into fifth spot, really. Fourth, fifth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, forget, obviously, City, Liverpool and Arsenal were there. And that's where United are. So it's a big leap to the next level, competing with City.
I was thinking about, actually, when I saw the news this morning about Dan Ashworth, and I was thinking about Erik ten Hag. I actually think it helps Erik ten Hag that Dan Ashworth's coming in. One, he's not someone who'll make a sort of like a knee-jerk decision when he comes in. I think he's quite measured. I think he'll see sort of Erik ten Hag staying another year while he has a look at the club and builds everything underneath. I think that would be, because that's what I think at England, I think he was quite measured around how he did things and sort of took his time. And
I think if a manager, a coach, because obviously there's still this, we still have in our heads, maybe going back to when we played directors of football, and we'd be a bit directors of football. It's all about the manager and the players. But if you get your head around a director of football coming in, you're on about Roy Hodgson. But if you see someone coming in and you believe they're there to help you, then it's great. I think it's when there's that, you know, you're on about Roy Hodgson, people are setting their ways and a guy's telling you you've got to do more sessions. He's thinking, you're telling me to do more sessions. Yeah. I can see why there can be hang-ups with an experienced manager, but maybe these foreign coaches, or Ten Hag will look at United and he's thinking, listen, we're going to take that power of recruitment away. He might go, actually, I'm delighted you're doing that.
Yeah.
Let you focus on that and let me focus on trying to get Man United back to competing to winning titles. So if your head is in a good space and you're thinking, Dan is here to help me and get the people around me, then it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's when you think somebody's... Are they going to be hindrance?
Did you work with the sporting director at Sunderland, Nandips, which are just... Was it Niall at Sunderland, was it?
No, he was the chairman, yeah.
But he was like almost your...
Yeah, but it was always even chatting. Even when I was there, you were chatting about people coming into the club, but there was no director of football.
No.
But I think I would have been pretty open to that, as long as you feel it's the right person and they're coming in to help you.
And it's less work for you, isn't it? Because Frank said that. He said that he had to do everything, didn't he? In a way. Like, you just want to focus on what you've got to do.
If you believe in the person's coming in, if you think, listen, we're all on the same page, But listen, there's been plenty of stories where managers will say a director of football came in and he was just a hindrance.
He wanted
him out or straight away and you just get that vibe.
Yeah.
But again, I go back to it, but if someone comes in, you think, I'm going to help you with the scouting.
Was there one at Ipswich? No, there wasn't one at Ipswich either. So there wasn't one in,
No.
Who is the director of football at Liverpool now?
They haven't really got one. So basically...
So who's picking the new manager for Liverpool Football Club?
That will be... Billy Hogan is like the CEO, if you like. When you talk about director of football, I always automatically think of that as the guy who's involved in the transfers. Liverpool haven't really got one. They've got a German guy who's leaving now.
Right.
He's probably just left at the end of the transfer window. They've been through two or three, really, in the last 18 months.
Right.
And as I said...
But why two or three, Jamie? Like that, you know, if someone goes to Liverpool...
You're not going to make a pal with Klopp there, I don't think, are you?
Yeah,
what's the point of a sporting director with Klopp there? I think he's just going to run the shop, isn't he?
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Well, for two or three to go, two or three is a lot.
Well, basically, the one who'd been there a while sort of left.
Right.
The one who was his number two then was there 12 months now. I don't know exactly what went on, but he's just... And then this guy was always a part-time almost to get Liverpool through to basically probably when Klopp's going to go now.
I mean, City's Begiristain, you never hear or see of him, but you just know...
Yeah.
that you talk about connections, relationships. You know, I've seen him in sort of not in loads of times, but I think he's massively connected and sort of he understands the whole fabric of agency.
He's huge
of the,
for Pep
yeah, he's
well.
Massive.
But you shouldn't really hear from them, should you?
No.
Really? Not in terms of...
I suppose not, no.
Like, because they're doing their work behind the scenes. Yeah. We had someone come in, like, kind of above the manager. It wasn't like a sporting director job, but I think they have to know the role because this one at half-time was telling me how to play midfield when we were getting in the changing rooms and we're like, where's he came from? But I think it's like, they shouldn't really be...
But you've got to be comfortable. If you're one of the big clubs, and we look what they're trying to do at Aston Villa, Newcastle, City, obviously, a great example. You've got to have them people around that structure, your football club.
Yeah.
And Pep has got them. So Pep's not looking over his shoulder every week going, you know, have you got my back? And obviously, it does help if you're winning week in, week out. Whereas I reckon at United, where there's a bit of chaos, that can take a lot of your energy when you're getting distracted, where you're, and maybe you've too much power yourself in the recruitment. If someone takes that away from you and they're doing a good job, it's great for a manager. I bet you Pep doesn't get bogged down by all that stuff. I still think Pep's priority is, I've got to try and win the weekend. That's my only...
Yeah.
He's not getting distracted. I think he's got them people around him, that Spanish connection, a bit like Villa now. These top managers have got a bit of power and they have four or five people, not your coaching staff, people directors of football and who are working at board level. They're the ones you need behind you and will support you, particularly when you're going through a sticky patch.
What is his first job at United? Dan Ashworth.
To decide if Erik ten Hag's the manager for next season. I think it's an interesting one because the better they do, you think, obviously, that's better for United. But if United keep winning the way they won on Sunday, that's not sustainable.
No. You won't keep winning games.
No, but you know, if they almost muddle through a Champions League spot, I actually think it puts the ownership and Dan Ashworth in a difficult position because you can't win a league like that.
United, of course.
No, what I mean is, but I'm not talking about like a six-week period when we've all been there where you nick a few results. We're actually sort of almost 2 years in. Listen, and we've said it a million times about Erik ten Hag's style of play. It is what we're seeing now. I'm not sure you can win the biggest trophies playing like that. So and I think obviously Brailsford would know that. Maybe Dan Ashworth, like looking at maybe how Liverpool play or City play, or even Arsenal, to be fair.
Yeah.
And it'll be that thing of we'll win.
Tottenham, Villa, they all play well.
So what my point being is though, you could get to the stage where Man United still finish in the Champions League position. Say they finish fifth.
Yeah.
Very difficult to change a manager, but at the back of their heads, I'm probably there, probably looking at thinking, it'd be a tough one, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To change the manager. And if they had somebody who could implement the type of football that we see the top teams playing, that would be the brave thing to do.
We still watch United. United all the time. You do not know what you're going to get with United. Like, do we, Ken? Yeah, no. You need a bit of luck. And it's nice to win a game where you think you've not played well. But you look over the last 4 or 5 weeks, even FA Cup and conceding goals, Spurs come about 3 or 4 weeks. It is hit and miss, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think if the results say don't go well, it's easy, isn't it? You just go the results and the style of football, we're going to make a change. But if you're getting the results, and
well, that's interesting about the people who've come into United upstairs now. Are they going to be brutal with that and go, listen, we've snuck into fifth and we got to an FA Cup semi-final or final and got beaten by a brilliant City team? They go, that's not good enough for us.
I think they would leave it to Dan. I think Dan coming in as sporting director would demand that he has veto over sacking manager. I can't believe he would come in without that.
You can't rely on the results, or can you? You've got to build a performance that the result will take care of itself. It's almost like, Villa. Villa played better, right?
But I felt in that game. I was actually going to do this on Monday Night Football, but you know, different things came up.
When Declan Rice's corner.
but it was a bit like, even though it was a great result, brilliant. I mean, to go to Villa and win now is one of the toughest places to go. So a brilliant win. But I still felt when I was watching the game at home, I was like, I'm still seeing things that I saw at Tottenham after about like the third game of the season, where there's like loads of space in midfield, the fella between the lines, just getting on running at Man United's defence. Mm-hmm. That was happening at Tottenham.
Yeah.
Like 4 or 5 months ago. You know, it just...
But part of it, where the problems are, because we're sitting there going, they got out of jail and they won the game. But this is Man United trying to get into fifth, maybe fourth. But fifth, really, you're going, but that's where United are at.
Yeah.
A good result at Villa. Yeah, listen, you take it, of course, to get fifth. Fifth. We're not even debating anymore about United. Could they push City? Could they close Arsenal, Liverpool? No. Forget that. United now are competing with Spurs and Aston Villa.
Yeah, our ambitions have been depressed so low that we're now sort of accepting that actually fifth would be good. You're actually into that position now, where you're telling yourself 70% chance next season of getting to the Champions League at fifth.
That'll
be good, and all of a sudden
were we not having the same conversation last year?
Yeah.
You know, getting the Champions League.
10 years.
They won the League Cup.
Yeah.
And then could they get to the FA Cup? Even after the FA Cup final, when they got beat by City, the noise is coming out of United. And I remember listening to the manager after the game, some of the players are it's still nice to get to a cup final. You know, you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
I think the expectation to win these games.
The ambitions, though, were always too big on United, I think, in that period, because it always just left disappointment. I remember being like, reading things in the media and being like, United must be doing really bad. And they were second in the league. And I almost like felt sorry for them in a way. I'm like, they need a realistic ambition.
Never feel sorry for them, Jim.
No, but they needed like a realistic ambition. I feel like since Alex Ferguson left, it was like, win the league and then that's it. That's what we want. But maybe this will be the start of building. So, Champions League this year. Then next year, what's the next plan? Because it's almost like if they don't win, they're a failure.
But even sports science side, I think at United, we all know that top clubs are throwing millions at it. And I always look at Man United players, they obviously be injured, don't they?
Mm. Or not. They don't look the fittest team, do they? They're not the fittest team to get the
back.
Yeah.
Well, it seems that way, yeah. But in terms of players being injured all the time, you know, are they on top of all that? You know, Dan will get, he'll get the right people in to say, listen, we have to tidy up the Olympics, because that plays a huge part. Having players available, you know, the big squad. And it's constantly, I know you can have a player who can be unlucky, but it seems to be 5 or 6 lads constantly injured.
Do you know what I think he'll do? And I think that he'll look at a back analysis, because he's that type of guy. he'll definitely look at who's signed off on the players that have been signed in the last 2-3 years in terms of, because there'll be reports there, there'll be sort of, if you like, names against who's signed off on players. Yeah, we should sign him, we shouldn't. He'll definitely do all that.
Yeah.
And he'll definitely look at things like the players they've missed out on, what was said about those players as well, in terms of, say Diaz goes to Liverpool, or another player goes to, Declan Rice goes to Arsenal. They'll look and say, well, what were we saying about Declan Rice? Because that historically was a Manchester United player, Declan Rice, the best player in England that was basically at another club like West Ham. United would sign that player.
And what's the point in looking back at them?
No, just to sort of assess the staff that are in there, you know what I mean? Now, and oh, say, look.
They'll be under the cosh.
Yeah, he'll be looking at everything in detail. He's so detailed.
Yeah.
I do think there will be change, you know, whether that brings success, but there will be change in terms of everything that goes on. And it's needed. I mean, they've operated for 10 years without a sporting director.
Wow.
With a manager and, you know, Ed Woodward, who's predominantly a banker and financier.
Banker, you said.
Super Sixes!
Are we getting good news, yeah?
Jamie, take a call.
Yeah. Even, no, I mean, you just answer the call.
I'll get someone to pick me up.
Any chance, lads? What's happening?
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Right, come on.
If we haven't done well, I wasn't here, so.
Well, let's go then.
Right.
Is that West Ham and Arsenal again? We're not playing them twice in a week. Oh,
it's still Burnley.
Give us that your team.
Right. We'll go first. Oh, go ahead.
Do you want last week's scores?
Yes, please.
Right.
Sorry.
You both got 4 correct results.
Oh. But.
Correct, but
earning you 8 points, which
top
7%.
There's no correct scores.
No, 4 correct results, no correct scores. However, obviously, there was the Salford game, wasn't there? Super 7.
The Salford
and
Wrexham.
Did you get the right score, though?
I got the right result.
Yeah. Right result. So Salford won 3-1.
Yeah.
What was the result?
Played very well against Wrexham. Yeah, very well.
So, Gary, you get the bonus 3 points.
Thank you very much.
That you made up.
I'm going to go this week. I can't wait to watch it.
Did your manager get booked again midweek?
Yeah.
What was that for?
He's feisty. He's from your neck of the woods, isn't he?
So, wait, you won't be getting bullied.
Jamie, I went to that game the other night.
Oh, was he?
Oh, I swear to
long God. Ball.
The ball was in for treatment the next day.
You said to play like City. I can't wait to come on back.
So, Gary, you got 11.
You're invited on Saturday.
You and Jamie.
Barrow. Roy will be there.
Prawn cocktail sandwich.
Can we
so
have
you're on 87.
Roy can name a bonus game this week if he wants. Make it Super 7 if he wants to think of a game.
Why don't we put one of the women's games in?
Yes, we'll do that. We'll do that. We'll do that this week.
Maybe discuss that before the show.
Chelsea is women's football as well.
Where is
Chelsea?
Roy, you got 8 points.
That's City or that Chelsea?
And you're on 57.
That's a good game to do.
Right, Chelsea City.
It's okay. It's all right. It's all right.
City win
in the WSL.
Also, there was the. The competition winner, wasn't there? So we've got someone correctly predicted the score.
If someone predicted 3-1 and they drew out
the hat.
Yeah, they
did, and they have been.
And it's...
They can watch you. Is that one?
Yeah. It's Martin from Belfast.
Oh, Martin. From Belfast. We can't wait to see you here in the Overlap studio doing Stick to Football.
Yeah.
Who's he support?
Voice cousin.
I don't know.
It's right.
Voice cousin. Neck of the woods.
Yeah. So there we go. Right.
Right. Burnley and Arsenal.
Arsenal.
We're going to go for an Arsenal win.
2-0 for us.
2-0. Yeah, we'll go 2-0. In fact, should we go 3?
Yeah.
Could you do 2?
Yeah, okay, we'll go 2.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Now, what do you think? Let's talk.
Why? Because it's a permanent marker.
Well, yeah. You said the last time.
3-0.
Oh, you just copy what you've said, Jill.
Go with it.
Yeah, 3-0.
No originality, Jill.
I even copied you, went 2.
I know, but you heard me say so 3 and then you...
Yep.
Spurs, Wolves.
Ooh.
All right, I'll talk to you when you just decide on your own.
Brentford are 12.
Did Wolves... Did a few players get injured for Wolves this week?
No, the
tell
the
you
top
who's
striker.
Doing well, Tommy no. Doyle.
Funny,
he
is out
came
for the
through
season,
with Foden at the academy.
Is that Hamstring?
Centre-half.
Midfield.
Is there not a Doyle that played centre-half for City that was a young lad?
Young lad,
Tommy Doyle for Wolves.
Yeah.
2-3-1 Spurs. 2-3-1. I'll go.
I'll go 3-1.
Is he not?
I'm not sure.
There's a young man in midfield for Wolves.
Yeah.
Done all right.
Tommy Doyle, he's good. His granddad played for both his granddad.
But has he got a brother called Doyle that was a centre half that played?
But there's probably Doyle as well, but.
We need to get through this.
Go on, let's go.
Come on. Someone please have a look for me to see whether there's a Doyle that plays centre half.
All right, boy, you just decide.
Go on.
You've been Fulham
and Villa.
The second one.
That's a horrible one to actually try and get your head around.
Right, okay.
You're like my director of football.
Fulham and Villa.
You're interfering with me.
2-1 Villa.
I was going to go 2-1
Villa. Think Villa win.
Oh, Villa are gone.
I think they've gone a little bit.
Nah,
I think I'll go 1-1. 1-1.
One, one.
No, 2-1 Villa. Oh. We'll beat Fulham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Jill's goal. Jesus, Jill, you're not messing about.
Brave, well done, Jill.
Thanks.
That's the most
City, Chelsea.
Joe, something. You need to come and sit there every week because Wrighty is just so indecisive with him.
2-0 City.
It's our goal, isn't it, anyway?
I think that could be a big
Callum
one.
Doyle. Is he a centre-half?
Oh, he was at Sunderland.
Yeah.
Andy was at City, yeah.
The centre-half.
Yeah, they're not brothers.
Oh, my God.
They're not brothers?
No. No.
All right.
I'm going to go...
Tommy Doyle's good, though. I think it's both his.
City 3.
Right.
I'll give Chelsea a goal.
I think Chelsea will score.
Palmer.
I don't.
Do you not think so? They've got enough quick players to do something stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got Mudrick and all them.
Yeah.
Well, they do something daft, aren't you? Exactly. They're going to run through at some point.
Hey, who's that much this season?
Who ran through against...
They do
Brentford.
Jackson.
Hey, direct kick out.
Jackson. You know, Fernandez has got something about him that he'll create something.
Free kick the other week.
I think we're going to give him one. I wouldn't say against 3-1, but we'll go 2-1.
Come on.
Haaland's back. There'll be more goals than that, I think.
This is us. Sheffield United, Brighton.
Oh, tricky.
Dog of a game, man.
Brighton will. They just keep the ball, won't they, on the big pitch?
Yeah, Brighton win.
That's going to be... do you think a draw?
2-1.
Yeah.
2-1.
2-1 Brighton.
Brighton beat them a few weeks ago in that FA Cup. They hammered them.
Did they?
Yeah, but obviously they would have made changes. Sheffield United might get a bit giddy because they won away at Luton.
Yeah, they won.
I'll let you
and
have
then
this
Brighton
one.
Got...
Did you see Luton's possession in that game?
What was it?
75%.
Oh. Was it?
I saw it Monday morning when we got the stats. I couldn't believe it.
Come on.
I'll go... No, there's always a kind of a bizarre result over the weekend, isn't there?
Come on.
Sorry. 3-1 Brighton.
I'd have gone 2-1.
They've gone 2-1.
Yeah, they can't go past.
You know what I mean?
2-2.
Ego. It's ego, Jill. It's ego.
I'd have gone 2-2.
It's you now.
Oh, it's us.
Luton, Man United.
Oh.
This could be anything, this, couldn't it?
Could be. United winning. Just like this.
United are winning. Yeah. United are winning Sunday.
New sporting director.
I reckon Luton will get a set piece, or do we get bonus points?
It's up to Gary, innit?
I don't think it'll become
2-1 United.
I would say 2-1 United. Would you say 2-1? I would say
3-1.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, United get 3-1.
Let's go 3-1, yeah.
3-1.
Yeah, late, Anthony. Yeah.
By bonus game, Chelsea City women. Chelsea are at home Friday. What are you going?
Go on.
Emma Hayes is going to tactically outwit.
At Chelsea.
Man City.
At Chelsea, but my heart, I can't bet against
it.
I can't bet against it.
Where is it, Chelsea?
It's at Chelsea.
At Chelsea, WSL, Super 7, by the way. They won't be happy that we've rebranded them, but that's the way it goes, isn't it? We roll with it.
I'm going City, me. 2-1.
Right, well, I'm...
Chelsea?
We're going Chelsea 3-1.
Oh, yeah.
Chelsea 3-1. And what are you going...
Don't doubt it, Jill.
Because you played for City.
No, 2-1 City.
2-1 City.
Yeah, they're playing well.
At Chelsea?
Yeah.
Right.
Great.
We're good.
Excellent.
Right. 30 points.
Well, we're 30 points behind.
We're so strong.
Change quickly. Change very, very quickly.
We're not like a pacemaker either that gets out there and then falls.
We're like Jose Chelsea.
Just going, yeah.
You're
just
like a Dan Ashworth. You're like building your foundations, aren't you?
I hope you enjoyed the show. That was our Super 6 or Super 7 predictions. Next week, we've got a very special guest and we're 70,000 subscribers away from a million. So please help us get over the line.
Chelsea make an approach for Brighton's head of recruitment for the second time in 14 months.
But they've got that.
Do you know who it is?
Can I tell you something?
It's Paul Jules. You know,
they've got the Brighton sporting director.
Can I tell you something? You know what all these lads know? It is Brighton, all these clubs. It annoys me. People go, they've got all the answers. So what were Brighton doing for the last 30 years? What were these clubs doing? And all of a sudden, they've got all the answers. Yeah.
No, I agree. It's like at Liverpool, everything's down to like...
It's like Southampton.
Michael,
Leicester.
It's
like, who was the guy from Leicester?
Manager?
Who was the Leicester guy with Everton?
Steve Walsh.
He'd done a good job, but everyone thought he was the answer.
Exactly. It's like Southampton. They had a period of about 4 or 5 years where everyone signed Southampton's players.
I think the thing with recruitment is not doing bad things and then you're almost, right, that's our model, whatever. United have done daft things, like buying players like over the... Remember, who's the guy he bought up front like about 5 or 6 years? Falcao or someone, or
yeah, he came in, yeah.
You know, like Schweinsteiger, Bayern Munich, like go
oh, yeah,
even Varane,
yeah.
Real Madrid, they're like he's always injured. You have, yeah. You know what I mean? They're bad things.
Yeah.
Just do the right things, and then it's up to the manager to make it. You know, yeah. Get the team or stuff yeah. Like that.
I hear more about sporting directors and all these people and than the actual answers. Players.
But do you know something? You we discussed team. This a few weeks ago. It's manager-led recruitment. Manager gets in a panic, thinks I want that player, and there's no I've, conduit there.
Yeah, no, I
the
agree.
Owner
with
goes,
I
ain't got a clue.
But you ask me, I agree with you on that side of it. But let's not think there's somebody. At a Brighton or a Sheffield United who's got all the answers.
So if Carl Robinson keeps you up and he wants a player in the summer, what are you saying?
Hey, I'm saying nothing because I'm not there anymore.
Oh!
I'm not there anymore. It's nothing to do with me.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.